When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Las Vegas. It's so much more than just a city.
It's a feeling. It's that feeling of excitement when you spot the lights of the Strip out the airplane window.
It's that feeling of awe as you stroll down the boulevard, taking in the sights and sounds.
And it's that feeling of satisfaction, knowing that you're in the greatest city in the world.
Tens of millions of people share that feeling every year.
And I'm just one of them. Here to take you to the world-famous Vegas Strip
and beyond.
My name is Jeff, and this is Jeff Does Vegas. Welcome to a special bonus episode of Jeff Does Vegas. I'm now 5+ years into this podcast journey with over 200 episodes available, including bonus and special episodes. There's a ton of great topics that I've covered on the show over those years, and a lot of those episodes are now buried deep in the archives. So I thought that in order to save you searching all over the place looking for those episodes, I'd go ahead and do the digging for you with a little feature I like to call From the Vault, where I reshare what I consider to be some of the best conversations from the run of the podcast. This time around, I want to start by sharing one of my all-time favorite quotes from the great Michael Scott of The Office.
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Whether we like to admit it or not, I think everyone is just a little bit superstitious to some degree. And I don't think there's anywhere in the world where that superstitious nature is on display more than in Las Vegas. Whether it's a lucky shirt that you always wear when playing blackjack, or tapping the buttons in a certain order when playing video poker, or not using $50 bills in slot machines. And those are just a few examples of things that I've seen on my Vegas trips. But is there any science behind superstition? To answer that question, I decided to bring in a professional. Back on episode number 52, I was joined by Stuart Vise. Stuart is a behavioral scientist, a teacher, and a writer. He's also an expert on superstition and irrational behavior. I wanted to get his take on the world of superstitions. We discussed some of the most common superstitions and their origins. We chatted about whether or not certain cultures are more superstitious than others. And we talked about some famous superstitions in the world of sports, music, and theater. Please enjoy my conversation with Stuart Vise.
My background is that I am a psychologist, but I'm quick to add that I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm a scientific experimental psychologist. I'm interested in what average people do and why they do it. And so I went the usual route and have a PhD. And for many years I taught at a liberal arts college and I enjoyed that very much. And I did some research while I was there, but I'm now just a writer and spend all my time writing, and which I enjoy very much. And I got into this. I mean, superstition has been very good to me. It started quite a long time ago, and I would never have expected that it would become as big a part of my career as it has. But I was in graduate school many years ago, and I read an article. This is one of those moments that graduate students sometimes have because we're young and enthusiastic. But I read an article, and it was so appealing to me and exciting that I ran into the office of my advisor and said, you know, this is really strange behavior these people are doing in this study. We should drop everything and study that. And my professor sort of patted me on the head and said, no, you're going to continue doing what I've been telling you to do. And and so I didn't get to study it at that time. But later on, when I was a faculty member and had my own lab, I was able to study it. And it was a situation where it was a very simple sort of video game situation where people were sitting at a computer screen and their job was to move a little circle from the upper left-hand corner of a little matrix of squares down to the lower right-hand corner of the matrix, and they would get a point. It was like the dumbest, simplest video game in the world, except that the students or the people who were in the study didn't know how it worked before they started, and they had to figure it out on their own. And in this experiment that I read, and later in ones that I conducted myself, people would make up these crazy theories as to how you have to go a certain pattern, you have to press the keys very softly, you know, all sorts of strange theories came up that were had nothing to do with how the points were derived at all. And so it was like a superstition, and that's what got me started. I later wrote a book on the subject. I've just finished a second book on the subject. So that's how it started. It was a coincidental thing, and I've always been interested in sort of the quirky things that humans do that are, you know, not pathological in any way, not a psychological problem, but the quirky things we all do, the irrational things that we all do as part of everyday life.
So not so much things like, say, OCD or things like that, where somebody, they've got that requirement where, oh, I have to turn the doorknob 4 times to the right before I leave the room. You're talking more the weird stuff, like you say, where I've got to follow this exact pattern because if I don't, it won't be lucky.
Exactly. That's right. And there is a borderline there between something that is a mental disorder. And mostly it has to do with the people who have OCD really are not enjoying what they're doing in the moment. It is they are compelled to do it. It's not a happy thing, and they're anxious the whole time. Whereas often superstitions, although there's anxiety associated with superstition in everyday life, often the superstition actually makes you feel a little bit better, and then you're done with it. It's not like you have to do it 50 times in the way that that someone with OCD would. And so, I mean, superstition is very common, and it is there is a psychology behind it that supports it.
So what are some of the most common origins of superstitions? I mean, at some point, somewhere along the line, something happened because they thought something happened or they didn't do something. Is it a religious thing? Is it a cultural thing? Where do most of these superstitions come from?
All of the above. Yes. So many of them have a religious origin to them, or they played a role similar to religion at one time. And actually in the ancient times, if you called something a superstition, it was likely to be a religion that you didn't believe in. So for example, in early Christianity, actually the Romans, who still believed in their gods, would be called superstitious for believing in the old panoply of gods. Or in Roman times earlier, Jews and Christians were called superstitious because they believed a different religion. So it has that pejorative aspect to it, and so on. But many of the ones that have come up to us that we still use today or hear about today, hopefully you don't use all of them. they have a religious origin to them. So, for example, and of course, I have to say as a caveat before I get going that, you know, this is not science. This is folklore. And so there's a little bit of speculation. Unless it's written down somewhere where we can see it, we don't know for sure that these are the origins. But they seem to be, in many cases, the agreed upon or the most likely origins. But for example, the walking under a ladder is the origin of that has been thought to be that it creates a triangle that suggests the Trinity, and that by walking through it you disturb it, or you violate this shape that is a reminder of the Trinity. Similarly, Friday the 13th. Now this is, I hesitate whenever I talk about Friday the 13th. I have to make another big caveat because this is probably the most contentious of all superstitions. There are several theories about where it came from, and I have set upon one that I think is the most well defended. Mm-hmm. The origin, the most common origin, or what I think is the strongest story about the origin of the Friday the 13th, is the Last Supper. That it's the concept. It started with the concept of 13, a group of 13 people, or specifically even 13 people at a table, as being unlucky. And of course, the idea being that Jesus was betrayed by Judas Iscariot and then crucified. It started out originally as just being 13 at a table. Eventually, 13 got sort of freed from the table and became unlucky in and of itself. And then once freed from the table, it sort of merged with Fridays. Fridays had always been thought to be unlucky because hangings were done on Friday. Friday was called Hangman's Day.
Geez, I had no idea about that.
Yeah. And in fact, it's interesting. I stop me if I'm going on too long. But there were at the turn of the century, there were a number of Friday the 13th clubs. These were people who were very non-superstitious, and they wanted to. There was one in Philadelphia and New York. There was one in London. And they wanted to sort of tempt fate and show that it wasn't an unlucky number. And they would deliberately have dinners in which there were 13 people at a table, and they did other things. It was kind of a fun thing. But they also, in a very serious way, led a campaign to create the 5-day work week and to have Saturday be a day off. Thereby making Friday no longer a bad day. We now think of Friday as a very good day. Mm-hmm. Because it leads to the weekend. And so it's an interesting side note on that story. But having told you this, I'm sure that there will be hate mail from people who there are two other theories that are most common. One involves the Knights Templar, which was a crusading knights, group of knights during the Crusades that became very wealthy, and they were in a big controversy. They were arrested on the 13th day, and some of them ended up being burned at the stake. And so that's one theory. Mm-hmm. And then there's a third one that involves Norse mythology that there was a group of 12 gods. 13th one was Loki, who the evil god Loki, who then instigated a fight that led to the death of the beloved god Balder. Mm-hmm. It's gods. That's also another religious origin in a way. But that one is also not very well supported. And so in terms of records in newspapers and other written sources, the Last Supper theory appears to be the strongest one.
And 13 really took on an entire life of its own, didn't it? I mean, there's office buildings and hotels that don't have 13th floors and airplanes that don't have 13th rows and things like that.
Right.
It really... Never mind just Friday the 13th. It's the number 13, period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about superstition in general is those places where it interacts with the economy, in which case it will be it will be, become an issue, because nobody wants to either lose money in the case of a bad superstition, or gain, or fail to make money off of a good one. So in Western society, the number 13, it's true that they are still making elevators today that don't have 13 floors. And of course, in Vegas, I don't think any of the hotels, no. I mean, very few of the hotels have a 13th floor. Of course, they do. It's just called the 14th floor.
Right.
And in other cultures, other numbers, in Asia and China, the number 4 is very unlucky. And so, and number 8 is lucky. So there are elevators, any combination with a 4 is thought to be unlucky. So there are elevators. I've seen one photo of an elevator in Hong Kong that was missing the 4th floor, the 13th floor, and the 14th floor in terms of the buttons. So it gets complicated. Yeah.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the ladders. We've talked about the number 13. What are some of the more other common superstitions that exist out there? I mean, I know there's got to be hundreds of them, but what are some of the real common ones?
Well, I mean, here in the West, the most common ones are things like black cats. They're supposed to be unlucky. Black cats were thought to be associated with witches, and witches were thought to be able to transform themselves into black cats. So there was the worry that the black cat you see on the sidewalk might actually be a witch. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Some of the most popular ones are ones that that I was actually not as familiar with growing up in the Middle West of the United States as other people in the world were. So, for example, one of my favorite superstitions is the evil eye, which I had never heard about until quite late in my career. And yet it's a widespread superstition in both South America and the Middle East and in Europe. Are you familiar with this one?
No, not. I mean, you've heard the phrase somebody giving you the evil eye, but not really 100% knowing what that means.
Yeah, it's a thing. The suggestion is that there are apparently malevolent people out in the world who have the ability to harm you simply by looking in a certain way, and so as a result, there are various ways that people deal with it, and it has become quite an industry in and of itself because there's jewelry associated with it, like that you may have seen Hamsa, this hand-shaped pendant that people mm-hmm. sometimes wear, often with an eye in the middle of it.
Right.
And there's also this thing called a Turkish Nazar, which is a blue and white, sometimes made out of glass, blue and white pendant that's quite lovely. And it also has an eye-like shape to it that is supposed to draw the evil eye away from it or reflect the evil eye back at the perpetrator. it's amazing, and it has, I mean, I don't want to go into it too far, but it has various cultural differences. So, for example, the way it's dealt with in the way you do a counter sort of action to fight against it might be different and is different in the Middle East than it would be, for example, in Italy, where it's also very popular. So I was surprised by it. And it's clearly fear-based. It's typically when you have something of value, often a baby, a new baby, and you fear that for its safety that someone will be jealous or envious and want to do harm by harming the baby. So it's an interesting widespread and very old. It's mentioned in the Bible, so it's quite old.
And I mean, there's others too. I mean, breaking a mirror, that's always a big one that comes up, the 7 years bad luck breaking a mirror.
And that has, again, a fairly old origin to it. But the interesting thing is that you said 7 years, And that is what most people say now. But over the years, what has happened is, you know, that that it has varied. Some in some cases, you know, in the 19th century or earlier, they might say that someone in that house would die within the next year. That might be the curse. So it's that has varied. But yeah, I know. But that's you know, mirrors. We think of them as such simple things now, but they were quite valuable and unusual. There were not in olden times, there were not very many opportunities for people to actually look at their own faces. And they were thought to have somewhat mystical powers. There were people who sort of would use them in telling fortunes and so forth. And so they've had a sort of magical quality to them all along. And so breaking one was thought to be, you know, both tied up in the magical aspect of the looking glass, but also because it was valuable, was one of the reasons why that's thought to have started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Talked a little bit about the different superstitions crossing into different cultures. Are there certain cultures that are more superstitious than others?
You know, I've gotten this question for 20 years or more, and I used to sort of punt and say, well, we all have our levels of superstition and so forth. But I've changed my view on that, and I would say, and this is relevant to Las Vegas. I would say that at least in terms of the everyday part of everyday life, Asian culture, the Chinese are more superstitious than we are, and you know the it does show up part of the reason I say that is that it shows up so much in commerce, in the economy. So, for example, feng shui, the whole concept of feng shui in houses and buildings, that a house has to be oriented a certain way in space, and the landscaping has to be done a certain way in order for there to be positive energy within the house and to affect the people in the house. And so there are consultants on this. And of course, there is no scientific basis for this. I have to point that out at the beginning, just in case. But there's no scientific basis at all. It's very ancient. It's part of you know, a longstanding Chinese culture. But it really does have an impact on how much people will pay for a house. And so it's constantly, you know, something that you have to deal with, as there are these numbers. You know, there are studies that show that people will, in a housing boom, there's one study, I'll just quote one statistic for you. In a housing boom in Hong Kong, people are willing to pay, were shown in one study, willing to pay 3% more for an apartment that had an 8 in the floor number. So if it was on the 18th floor or the 28th floor or the 8th floor, they would pay, on average, across all the apartments, they would pay 3% more for that place. And similarly, you know, there are studies that show that apartments on the 4th floor, 14th floor, go for less money because they're thought to be unlucky. And, you know, so it's pervasive in everyday life, in Chinese culture.
It's interesting that you bring up the housing thing, because I used to live in a condominium that I was trying to sell. This was years ago. And first of all, the address was 635. So it adds up to 14. So I was screwed there on. And I did have a real estate agent that contacted our realtor, that he said I had Asian clients that were looking to buy. And then I showed them the address and they were done. And so that was number one. But then number two, it's really interesting that you mentioned the feng shui, because the stairway to go upstairs as you came in the front door of the condo was right there. And I was told again by my realtor, I will never be able to sell this to an Asian client because the feng shui in their mind, because the stairway terminates at the door, all of the fortunes go right out the front door of the home.
Yes. There's a lot of talk about fortunes and coming in the house and out of the house. And, you know, there are feng shui coins that you can buy that will somehow help, you know, with all of that and so forth. And so it is a big issue. And as I say, you know, think about it. You know, we are aware of things like black cats and the number 13 and so forth, but they don't really affect commerce and everyday life in quite the same way as they appear to in Asian culture. So that's what I would say about that. I find it fascinating. I mean, I think it's just it's quite interesting. There is a lot of research right now. In we're kind of in a boom of research on superstition in the Chinese market, you know, because of the huge expanse of the Chinese economy in the last few decades. And they have money and they are buying things like everyone else. And so there's a lot of interest in how you can. I think I have some ethical qualms about this, because I'm not sure we should really be encouraging people to be superstitious. But at the same time, they definitely are doing research these days on how to use or not use superstition to make more money. Red is a color associated with good luck in Chinese culture. Wedding dresses are often red. And if you think about it, you see a lot of red. And so they do studies to find out whether if you make your product that you're selling, your widget, red instead of another color, you know, how will that affect the customers and so forth. So it's fascinating.
Does all this research maybe explain all of the bright red 888 slot machines that I'd be seeing in Las Vegas?
It could very well. Yeah. I mean, you know, to take a look and see which ones are more popular, and you may have your own answer.
Interesting. I assume there's a lot of athletes and actors and singers and celebrities that all have their own superstitions that they follow.
Yes, there are. I have not studied this as much as other things, but in my first book on superstition called Believing in Magic, The Psychology of Superstition, I talked a lot about a fellow who's now retired, but a baseball player named Wade Boggs, who was extremely superstitious. And he believed, he was also a very good hitter. He played for the Yankees and for the Red Sox. And he was voted into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot, and he made several batting titles. But he believed, ever since high school, he believed that he hit better after eating chicken. And so he ate chicken every single day. I mean, there's no way to know whether he hit better or not eating chicken, because he never avoided chicken. He always ate it. And so who knows, right? But he believed that it got him more hits. And he had lots of other superstitions as well. He had a 4-hour long ritual that he went through before each game and so forth. And those kinds of rituals before play are very common among athletes. There's also a rumor, again, this is stuff that's hard to verify, but there's a rumor that Michael Jordan, when he played basketball for the Chicago Bulls, would wear a pair of his college shorts underneath his Chicago Bulls shorts as a good luck thing. And I always like to point out, as a sort of a different kind of example, that Taylor Swift was born on December 13th. That's her birth date. And for her, 13 is her, she has claimed it as her lucky number. And so she doesn't do it, I think, as much as she used to in the past, but I am told that she used to write the number 13 on her wrist, especially before performing. And, you know, she has other rituals that she does. I think her Twitter handle is Taylor Swift 13. So she's quite enamored of it. And it turned out that her 30th birthday, which I think was just this past December, was actually on Friday the 13th. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to keep in mind when it comes to these number superstitions that there are going to be babies born on those days. And for those people, it's going to be one of the happiest days in the year. And, you know, even in Hong Kong, if a baby's born on the 14th of the month, I'm sure it's going to be a happy day for that family. So,
well, and I know actors and performers always have all these different superstitions. I mean, there's the classic, you can never tell somebody good luck. It's
right,
always
right.
Break a leg. Right. You don't say good luck.
Break a leg.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. I'm fascinated by the theater. There are a couple of famous. Of course, the other thing is the Scottish play. If you do not mention Macbeth by name. Oops, I just did it. you know, because that's supposed to be bad luck. And the thing about Macbeth, this is contentious as to why that one developed. Macbeth is a very violent play with a lot of sword fighting. I think it may have the most deaths on stage of any of Shakespeare's plays, don't quote me on that, but it's close, if not exact. And so that may be part of the reason, because, you know, the possibility of accidents while you're playing on stage. But I've heard another theory that involved a song that they used to sing, when it was played in the past. So I'm not sure exactly what the origin of that one is. The other theater one that I like is not whistling backstage. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of a superstition that actually had at one time a rational origin to it. Which is that in the old days, they didn't have walkie-talkies to talk to each other. You know, the crew on stage did not. And so they would be the people who were hired to move scenery, and often scenery involved just like a canvas backdrop that had to be rolled up like a shade and then another one put down. Many of the people employed for that were sailors, you know, who were good with ropes and pulleys, right? Mm-hmm. And they would communicate with each other by whistling, so that they knew when to do certain things and what to do backstage. And so if you were just mindlessly whistling backstage, you might end up with a piece of scenery on top of your head, because it would be, you know, confused by the crew. So that was the original origin, but it's continued and they're not, you know, it lasts beyond its rational beginnings.
So we've hit on this a couple of times already, and you've said this, but I'm going to ask the question anyways. Is there any science at all to back up any of these superstitions at all?
Well, the short answer is no, but the longer answer is that there's a potential for possibilities in very specific circumstances. And so now I'm speaking to your Las Vegas audience, right? When I say that, you know, when you play the slot machine, any slot machine, you play roulette, or any of the games that are purely chance, right, where you're not actually involved at all, obviously for some games there are betting strategies, even if they're purely chance, like craps. I confess I don't understand craps, but I understand it involves dice. Right?
Yes, that much and, I know and, too. That's about right. as much as I know as well.
Okay, so there's nothing you can do to make the die roll, you know, the way you want them to. That is the scientific fact. But here's the hedge on that, right? So superstition will not help you in those contexts, and yet they're very common. You pointed, just as an aside, you mentioned the people tapping the screens of the slot machines and so forth. The Bally people who make some of those slot machines, I don't know whether they've actually produced them yet, but they have patented a special kind of slot machine that would actually respond to those superstitious taps on the screen, that they would give some kind of a feedback in order to, again, to try to monopolize on that and encourage the people to continue doing it. The idea being that people who do that tapping, and if they're rewarded for it in some way, that they'll keep playing, they'll play more. So it's not, they're aware of this stuff. But there's nothing at a slot machine or a roulette table that will help you. Now, if you are actually engaged in a skilled activity, and here I think the better analogy is theater or sports, not so much the casino. But if you're engaged in a skilled activity, it seems logical, at least it's possible, right? There is a possibility that there would be a psychological benefit, that the superstition would give you, you know, a feeling that you've done something else, that you've added to your circumstances, and that psychological feeling would lead to better performance, right? Would lead to better hitting on the ball field or batting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that seems logical to me. And a few studies have tried to show that. And I have to confess that the results have so far been mixed. I mean, that may be the fault of the scientists, that they haven't done the right kind of studies yet. But so far we can't say for sure that even that works. So it's still an unanswered question, I would say. There have been some positive studies and some negative studies. So we shall see. But there's no question, people are superstitious, right? And it's been going on for centuries. So something must support it. My guess is that it is the immediate feeling that you feel better doing it. And whether that leads to better performance is still, we're not sure about that.
The only superstition that I've come across for myself in a casino is that my wife can't be anywhere near me. She's got this pall of I don't know, bad luck and darkness that hangs around her in the casino. And one of these recent trips, we sat down at a machine and I put some cash in, and she was standing there watching me, and I was losing. And as she started walking away, I started winning again. She came back and I started losing again. So I don't know if that's superstition or if that's just bad luck or what that is.
I don't know. I mean, it's not a scientific test, so we'll have to see. And, you know, the test would be to have her stand there, but in such a way that you can't see that she's there, and have her, you know, go back. That, I mean, here's the study I would design, right? Is that she's there, but you can't see her, right? And then have her move back and forth and see how your luck changes. But I'll meet you in the casino and we'll set something up.
I don't know if I have enough money to do that scientific test, Stuart.
Oh, sorry about that. We'll have to get a grant or something.
Hey, let's get working on that. I'm okay with that. Stuart, you mentioned you do have a couple of books. You've got one currently available and one on the way. Let's talk about those a bit.
Yes, the book that I'm probably most known for and that has been out and is out now is called Believing in Magic: The Psychology of Superstition, and it's all about why people are superstitious, despite the fact that it seems, you know, sort of a paradox in this scientific world. And so that's one. And then one that's just now coming out, it'll be available in North America in April 1st, I believe it is. And it'll actually be available in the UK and on Kindle on the 23rd of this month. So, and it's called Superstition, A Very Short Introduction. And it is, it was an interesting book to write because I am a psychologist, a scientist, but this was a book about the whole thing, about the beginnings of superstition. There's a lot of history in there. There's a lot of the questions that you were asking about the origins of superstitions and various superstitions throughout the world. So it's a much more general book, and it's quite thin. The title is A Very Short Introduction. So I think people might enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, Stuart, I appreciate you taking time to sit and chat with me today about all this this stuff. This was a blast. I really enjoyed hearing about all of this.
That's great. It was fun for me too. Thanks for inviting me.
And that wraps up another episode of Jeff Does Vegas. If you've got feedback on this episode of the show, or any other episode for that matter, or you've got suggestions and ideas for topics you'd like me to cover on the podcast, please feel free to reach out via social media on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Jeff Does Vegas. You can also email me directly at jeff@jeffdoesvegas.com. In the meantime, thanks for checking out the show. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts so you'll be notified the instant a new episode is released. While you're there, go ahead and rate us and write a review. And don't forget to visit jeffdoesvegas.com for past episodes, show notes, Vegas deals, and more. My name is Jeff, and this has been Jeff Does Vegas, a Walker New Media production.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.